At the DGDG Mazda stores, we make car buying affordable. Hey, this is Sean Del Graham for Capital Mazda, Stevens Creek Mazda, Concord Mazda, and Team Mazda. And we make car buying more affordable with sweet dealer discounts, low APR financing, low monthly lease payments, and even gas-saving plug-in hybrids. Come see how easy and affordable car buying can be at the DGDG Mazda stores in San Jose, Concord, and Vallejo.
Financing on approval of credit.
Welcome to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. Here are Dan Rusinowski and Drew Remenda.
Episode 5 of what's been an unbelievable playoff run for an unbelievable number of teams. Just incredible hockey being played. As we head into the weekend, as we record this show, we've got an opportunity for a team to sweep. We've got other teams taking control of the series, and we have a lot that's definitely undecided. But Drew, the playoffs have been amazing.
They've been so good. Danny, we saw it this year, really, when it came to this regular season, with so many players just having their game. Everybody talks, they take it to the next level. Well, like a lot of guys did this year, from Artemi Panarin, who we're seeing, and the New York Rangers and what they're doing, to the Boston Bruins and Brad Marchand leading everybody in Pasternak's play. We've seen Connor McDavid do Connor McDavid things. The Vancouver Canucks kind of surprised us all coming out of the gate like they did, but they're now locked in a really good series with the Oilers. And the Florida Panthers, being the Florida Panthers, they are a crusty bunch, to say the least. And it's been fun hockey to watch. The games have been really entertaining. And so it has been a terrific playoff so far.
Well, let's get right to the Boston-Florida series, because that one has been absolutely incredible. And game number 2 started out with a hit like this one.
Here's Tkachuk to the right circle. Knocked down by Marchand. He just pasted him. That's going to be on every highlight reel in tomorrow's shows.
And by the way, any type of physical play in the playoffs, you can tell which team the broadcaster is working for. That's Judd Surratt playing the play-by-play for Boston.
It's so true.
I've got another call of the fight between Tkachuk and Pasternak, which sounds exactly like Tkachuk killed him, you know, but it really wasn't that way. But one thing we got was a great hockey game in game 2, and former Sharks draft pick Charlie Coyle got things going for the Bruins.
Coyle far side. Oh, Montour got pasted, gave away the puck, far circle, sent out in front. They score! Charlie Coyle, his first of the playoffs, set up by Pavel Zacha off the Panthers turnover. Bruins 1, Panthers nothing.
And things were looking mighty good at that point, but then a former Shark stepped into the fray.
Wostarinen down to our right, handled by the goaltender Swayman. While they're screwing up the boards, Heldy Montour tip. They score. The Panthers are on the board. This game is tied at 1. Steven Lawrence out in front of the net. Looks like he got a piece of that one, and the Panthers tied up less than 2 minutes into the second period.
From that point on, it was all Florida, and I'm just so happy for Steven Lawrence that he's gotten involved in the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know what? We talk about cheering for guys all the time, cheering for ex-Sharks. You know, we want to see Joe Pavelski and Mason Marchman, because he's part of the Sharks family with the late, great Brian, his dad, who worked for the Sharks and played for the Sharks. We're cheering for him, cheering for guys that played for the Sharks. And when we look at Steven Lawrence, was there a nicer, young gentleman that came into the San Jose Sharks? And
really, we've never had one. Maybe Patrick Marleau.
Patrick Marleau. A smile on his face every day. Every day in the NHL is a good day. Just a sweet kid. And I don't mean that to say that he's soft, because he's certainly not. Just a really nice young man. So if the Florida Panthers move on, couldn't be happier for the guy.
Yeah, it would really be fantastic for him to do that. And of course, things got a little bit ugly during the course of that contest as Matthew Tkachuk, as usual, tried to do something, and that was really something special.
It was old-time hockey, Danny. It got to the point where, well, we've seen the Florida Panthers do this all year, though. We've seen that they've got a blueprint on how to play, and they are jerks. they're taking that crown from the Carolina Hurricanes, and they are playing in-your-face hockey, and when the game got out of hand, oh my goodness, did we see some old-time hockey.
Well, the thing is that that's setting things up for the rest of the series. But the amazing thing was that Boston kind of has lost control in this thing because Florida wins by the score of 6-1 in game two. And then in game three, they continued it with a 6-2 win where things really got out of hand in terms of the way that the Bruins were managing the game in the third period, because that was a closer game than the 6-2 game. And then, of course, you know, what happened to Marchand near the end of the contest?
So he leaves with an upper body injury. You've got Jim Montgomery coming out, I think it was today or after the game last night, and saying he's got to be better, he being himself, because of the slow starts the Bruins have had. The fact that they figured out the Bruins goaltending, the Florida Panthers. The Florida Panthers team game seems to be, not seems to be, is better than the Boston Bruins. The Boston Bruins, Danny, they're playing careless hockey. They're not detailed. They're putting the puck in the wrong places. They're giving the puck away. They're not picking up their guys going to the net. They're allowing the Florida Panthers to just run roughshod over them. And this series could be over quicker than we think. After the Bruins won the first game, you're thinking, oh, okay, here we go, Boston. But Florida has responded with two stellar games, stellar, hard, tough to play against games.
Jim Montgomery, a real look of concern on his face after game number three. And of course, now the series still in Boston, the Bruins desperate for a victory at home because the last thing they want to do is go back to South Florida down 3-1.
Oof, that's tough. That's very, very tough. They have to be in a situation where first of all, how's Marchand? Second, what are you going to do in goal? Are you going to go back and forth in goal like you did last year if you're Jim Montgomery and have it just blow up in your face? Or are you going to stick with your guy? When he pulled Swayman after in the second game, Swayman comes into the bench and you could see Jim saying to him, it's not your fault. This is not on you. This is on us. We got to be better in front of you. And so what do you do now after taking another one right on the nose? In game three. So overall, when you're looking at this, there are some big decisions to be made in Boston about how to adjust. And I'm not sure, even if they do adjust, whether they have enough to beat the Florida Panthers.
Meantime, with the Rangers-Carolina series, it's one of the weirdest series that I've seen because the Carolina Hurricanes have absolutely dominated things. But goaltending makes a big difference in the Stanley Cup playoffs when you've got an elite guy. Shesterkin has been absolutely incredible.
Danny, you called that. You called that going into the playoffs. You called that during the regular season. Remember, we were talking about, we were in New York talking about the Rangers, and you talked about Shesterkin. And when you look at it, he wasn't as dominant numbers-wise. Save percentage and goals against this year as he was when we kind of first burst onto the scene, but he still led his team to the President's Trophy. They still easily handled the first round with the Capitals, and they're up 3-0 again with the Carolina Hurricanes. And Carolina Hurricanes in the last two games have had over 50 shots on Shesterkin and still lost the game. That's goaltending, baby. That's goaltending.
I don't understand it, to tell you the truth, the way that that series has gone. But one thing that we have seen happen is we have seen, the Hurricanes maybe crack a little bit simply because they put in Kochetkov in the last game and he played well, but it hasn't really been goaltending there. I don't think. I mean, Anderson let in one soft one earlier this year, but I don't think that was the biggest issue. Do you?
No, I don't think so. There's been some defensive turnovers in the zone. Some lack of coverage by the net, some bad bounces, but that's playoff hockey. And the in game three, the turnover that led to, I think it was the tying goal, was not good. And then the winning goal was just poor around the boards, not sealing off the boards on the dump in. The Rangers, when the Sharks played the Rangers, they love to dump that puck in. They go hard around. Not a good job along the boards. Not a good job taking Panarin. If you're going to be in overtime, who are you going to be looking for? Right?
You got to make sure.
You got to make sure you got number 10 handled. And he gets a beautiful tip, and that's it for the game. So when you look at it, it's a very dire situation for the Carolina Hurricanes, who are an outstanding team, But the Rangers, Danny, they're just better.
But there's something else, too, that's going on. And I think this is really related to the San Jose Sharks. Alexi Lafreniere was number one overall in the draft. And everybody was ready to trade him about a year ago and say, well, he's never going to make it. He's no good. But I think he's starting to showcase the patience you have to have with your top draft picks, as talented as they may be. And of course, I'm thinking about both Will Smith and perhaps Macklin Celebrini, depending on what happens. And I think we all know what is going to happen when we get to the sphere for the first overall draft pick. But check out Lafreniere on a very important goal for the Rangers in Game 3.
Moving in is Panarin with a feed for Lafreniere. He scores! The Rangers take the lead, 2-1.
That was a really big goal in the big scheme of things. And Peter Laviolette was talking about that at practice.
It was a huge goal, and like I said, it was a really good play by their line and the back end to win the faceoff and to get it and to stretch and push it to speed. But he didn't have a lot of time to get that puck off in the slot, and it was a heck of a shot. I thought that line's been good. Obviously, it had a huge impact in the game tonight. To speak specifically about Laf, I can't speak to the past. I can only speak to, you know, the last, however many it is, 6 months or whatever it might be. He's been, you know, pretty much set in stone with a couple of players, and that line has been extremely productive for us, and he's a big part of that. I know he's playing with some good players. He's playing with Artemi, who's, you know, proven to be one of the top players in the league, and Troch is a workhorse in the middle that does an awful lot of things, but you can't discount what Laf does as well with his skill level and the way he's grown even throughout the course of this year. I think he just gets more confident and confident as the season grows and now the playoffs grow.
Let's relate this now, Drew, to the future for the San Jose Sharks, because I remember when we had the most recent rebuild in the late 1990s, Patrick Marleau was here, and we ended up having him surrounded by very, very capable and steady veterans, which sounds like is happening with New York with young players like Lafreniere.
And when we got to talk to Patty on his jersey retirement, he told us and went on about how important Vincent Damfus, Gary Suter, Tony Granato, Kelly Rudy, those veteran players were to his career. Because it was hard to come into the National Hockey League as a 17/18-year-old, especially when you got a guy who's coaching you like Daryl Sutter, who does not mince words and does not deal with a velvet glove. He is a guy who's hard-nosed, as we all know. And Patrick needed people around him. Danny, he would come up and talk to us when he first came in just to get some information. Now you've got Lafreniere, and you know, Mike Greer was part of the New York Rangers before he came to the San Jose Sharks. And what couple things that Peter Laviolette said there when he's talking about Trocheck and Panarin, that they've been set in stone for a long time. I like that. I like that. That coaches put a line together and stick with them. Even in the down times, even in the tough times, you stick with those guys because you let them work it out, as the genius of Peter Laviolette. But the other aspect is having two veteran guys help Lafreniere about with his game. And you're right, 100% right, the patience you have to have sometimes with younger players. And it's worked out because of good coaching, smart coaching, and veteran guys, top-notch veteran guys in Trocheck and Panarin, around him to show him the way. That's something the San Jose Sharks are going to do. They've got $14 million in cap space this year. I don't know if they're going to do it this year. They'll have more next year. So when you bring the young guys in, you start surrounding him with those veteran players who have been around, seasoned guys, great character guys, guys that can play. That's how you start getting back into the top echelon of the National Hockey League.
Well, the first thing you have to do is make sure that you're more competitive. And I think that that's how Mike is going to probably spend his cap money, to make sure that the Sharks are a much more competitive team. As hard as this group worked this year in the 19 wins, it just wasn't enough in terms of of the talent level that they needed to be as competitive. So they need to do that. They need to address that. That obviously needs to surround these young players, assuming that, let's say, make the assumption that both Smith and, say, Celebrini come to the NHL this year. And that that's not even a guarantee. But if something like that begins to happen, you still have to worry about previous draft picks. You know, young guys like Jake Furlong coming in on defense, played for the Canadian junior team. Players of that nature, they're going to be coming into the organization and start to matriculate into the AHL. You need to have that base around. And I think that that's something that the Sharks are obviously working on. But you also need to have big-time players. And, of course, I thought this was interesting. Peter Laviolette was asked what he felt like going into overtime, about how crazy that game was, back and forth. Carolina refused to go away. They were absolutely dominating. They were depending on Shesterkin. But he gave an interesting answer about what he felt between the regulation and overtime period.
I'll be honest, I was really confident just in the way we were playing the game. You know, you got to remove some of the shots from the outside, and then you have to look at the shots that are actually quality scoring chances. And our guys, after the first period, I thought we did a really good job of playing better defense, better, a little better through the neutral zone, better in defensive zone coverage. And I thought we actually started to generate offensively. And then the third period, it was the same thing. And so it was tough the way that ended, but it shouldn't be a reflection of how you kind of got better as the game went on. And that was the messaging going back out there. And this is a resilient group, and they've been in these situations before. And I think just sending messaging that we were doing the right things. We're gonna finish this because of what we've been through and the way we're playing the game right now.
That reminds me of what Dan Boyle said when Team Canada went into overtime against the United States in 2010 in Vancouver, about how calm he felt inside the locker room looking around. And it sounds like Peter Laviolette felt the same way, and that's a big sign for the Rangers.
Yeah, when you're able to look around your room and you believe in the guy next to you and across from you, you get pretty good feelings. You know, I remember in 94, 95, when we played Calgary, when we went into overtime and then double overtime, you walked into that room and the guys, you could see it. You could see all those guys. They believed they were going to win that game, even though we were outshot badly. They were a pretty confident group, how hard they were playing and how much they were pushing. And so I understand that. And the confidence, it's a funny thing. I mean, you know my saying, I don't think you lose your confidence, you choose to give it away. The New York Rangers, they have a very confident group right now.
And they're getting better with every game, too. And I think that's something that's really a good sign for a team to come out of the conference. You've got some of that going in the Western Conference, too, which we'll get to in a couple of minutes. But I think that's something that we saw back in 2016 when the Sharks went all the way to the Stanley Cup Final. They dealt with the challenges. They had some adversity. They were calm about approaching it. And they got better, a little bit better, as the playoffs went on. Rangers are 7-0. I mean, think about that. Yeah. They haven't lost the game.
They have not lost the game. And like you said, Danny, they're getting better and better. This is the President's Trophy team who keep getting better and better. Last time they won the President's Trophy, they also won the Stanley Cup.
And I think they won their first seven games that playoff, too, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong on that. But I mean, they were on a great string when they won the Stanley Cup. And that started to change when we got to Matteau, but that's another story. No Matteau this year, but you've got the bread man that's doing a pretty good job.
Play the score! Score! Yes! Yes! The Rangers win it in overtime and lead the series 3-0.
Yeah, Sam Rosen got pretty excited at the ability to call that one because obviously that wasn't Joe Micheletti. That was Dave Maloney.
Oh, Dave Maloney.
Remember, this is Rangers radio.
Right,
but Sam,
right.
Sam normally wouldn't be working because of the fact that after round number one, it all goes to national television. But he gets a few games because Kenny Albert does so many national television games. Yeah. And so he jumps in on Rangers radio. So happy for Sam to see that one to fly off for him because that was a fantastic moment. Oh, yeah. Dave Maloney, former Ranger captain. Crazily involved in that one. That was a nutsy game. And of course, the Rangers are up 3-0 as part of an amazing playoff series.
We continue now with the Sharks playoff report on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
And so we move on to, let's see, which series am I going to go to? I think I will go to the Colorado Avalanche and the Dallas Stars. That's going to be a very, very interesting contest. Saturday night, the Colorado Avalanche will be at home against the Dallas Stars. Colorado won the first game 4-3. And in game two, Dallas came back and roared to victory. That was a very important win for Big D to stay in this.
Well, with Dallas, too, I mean, this has been, and Colorado, two teams that are really terrific skating teams, fast teams, skill teams. This has been a physical series, too. Like, Jamie Benn hit on Devin Taves. Wow. That was an old-time bruiser.
There's something else going on, too, that I think has been remarkable, and that is the challenge between two of the best defensemen in the game. Everybody knows about Cale Makar. Everybody talks about Cale Makar all the time. He's already won a Norris Trophy. But there was a guy that was drafted one spot ahead of him in the draft, Miro Heiskanen, that has stepped up, and here's an example.
Nice play by Manson to force him to the perimeter. Robertson still with the puck inside the circle. Down low, Pavelski, no angle shot. Save made by Georgiev. Puck is loose in the skates of Manson. Now somehow Rupe Hintz has it back. Colorado did everything right. They couldn't clear. This time it doesn't work. It's a one-timer at the back door and in by Merrill Heiskanen. And it's 1-0 Dallas.
That was not the only goal that he scored, however. Heiskanen would get a second goal in that game. And by that time, it was 3-0 in favor of the Dallas Stars.
To the point, Merrill Heiskanen. Heiskanen, his shot, deflected, they score. The second straight game. It's 3-0 Dallas.
Connor McKay, the unenthusiastic call for the Colorado Avalanche Altitude Radio Network. That you got to love it. I mean, that's the intensity that everybody has. It's what the fans that are listening are feeling. And so there we are. Now we have Heiskanen involved in just an amazing playoff run. What do you think of him, and how do you compare him to Makar?
Well, I think you bring up a great comparison. These two of the premier defensemen in the league. They're young. They're both really skilled. I think Heiskanen's a tad bit more physical than Cale. Cale is a lot of flash and dash and up the wing when he picks up the puck and he can scoot down the ice. They're both tremendous, tremendous players. The one thing about Cale is, maybe because just how smart he is and how good he is with his stick. And he's always seems to be in the right position because of skating. He doesn't need to be physical. Miro plays a little bit more of in-your-face game, but they're both so good. So, so good. And they have been the top two players in this series, with the exception maybe of Miles Wood, who's playing really good. But in this series, they are both perfect for their team. Perfect.
Tyler Seguin has had a pretty strong playoff, yes. Finally picked up his very first playoff goal of the postseason with a shorty. He talked about Heiskanen and described the type of player that he is.
Just a guy getting rewarded for all the amazing nights he's had. He does so many things that you don't get, you know, respect on the score sheet for. He's the number one guy you hate going against on a 2-on-1 or a 1-on-1 practice. It's been joked about for years here, and it's so true, all the elements he brings to his game and our team. It's awesome.
Meanwhile, head coach Pete DeBoer says that Heiskanen is a guy that's easy to overlook because of the way he plays, and yet he is an absolutely critical part of what Dallas is trying to do.
Yeah, it is. You take him for granted. You know, he plays his 27 minutes a night and has the puck on his stick all night and plays against everyone else's best players and, you know, runs your power play. You know, you do take him for granted because, you know, he is so easy to play and he's out there so much and we ask so much of him. But he was at a different level. You know, him and Rupe Hintz, I thought, really kind of grabbed that game and took it over.
So game three is on Saturday. Game four is on Monday. And those games are in Colorado, which is kind of an interesting factor because of the altitude situation. I don't know how much that really gets into it, but usually a practice or two and you're okay.
Yeah. And also Colorado's been so good at the Ball Center this year, or Ball Arena, I should say.
Well, that's for sure. Now, let's talk about the Edmonton Oilers and the Vancouver Canucks. Oh my goodness, what a game on Friday night between the Canucks and the Edmontonians. It was back and forth, up and down, everything going on. Elias Pettersson got things started for the Canucks.
Finally,
Finally. Lindholm are getting into it behind the play. Some pushing and shoving as the Canucks skate off ice. Here's Pettersson with speed. Left wing to the Oiler line. Drops to Miller. Rink wide right point for Lindholm. Now to Hughes. Middle of the ice to Miller. Left circle. Passes back door. Pettersson. He scores! Elias Pettersson has his first of the playoffs. And the Canucks score their first power play goal of the series. They take a 1-0 lead in game two.
Brendan Batchelor calling it for Canucks Radio. Pretty exciting call on that one. And of course, pretty exciting for Canucks fans to see Elias Pettersson step up. And there it is, Drew, yet another young player who's not a lot of playoff experience under his belt, finally getting some and growing.
Struggled in the first series, but was able to now, he started to get better. People thought he was injured or sick in the first series, but when against Nashville, but this series has been better, had some more chances in game one, but then game two, he got that big one that he needed.
And of course, Leon Draisaitl would step up for Edmonton.
30 seconds on the power play. Draisaitl, McDavid, back to Draisaitl, he scores, and this game is tied. Leon Draisaitl, power play goal, his sixth of the playoffs, and his fourth power play goal of the Stanley Cup playoffs. We are tied at one.
And it would go on from there. Of course, it came down to overtime in that one. And overtime was rather dramatic as Evan Bouchard would ended up getting the game winner.
Canucks breaking out to center. Pettersson right wing to the red line, dumps it in. Vancouver can change. Oilers will begin a change too. And there's Zach Hyman onto the ice with Draisaitl and McDavid. And here's McDavid with speed. Right wing to the Vancouver line for Draisaitl. On the boards, bottom of the circle. Back to Bouchard to the point. Carries down the wall, throws it to the goal. He scores! Evan Bouchard fired it to the net. And I think it bounced off one of the Canucks in front and in. And the Oilers, who never led in this hockey game tonight, have tied the series at 1-1.
Once again, the call from the Vancouver side of things. After the game, Connor McDavid, who had a really monster contest, talked about stepping up after a slow start.
Yeah, it just starts with work for me. I didn't think I worked at the level that I can in game one, and you got to make it hard on them. You know, you want to make them skate up and down the rink with you. And I know that when I work, there's not many that can play with me. And I thought our whole team was good. I thought we had great legs. Our little five-man group there with Leo, High, and Eck and Bouch were real good tonight and created a lot of chances. Didn't spend much time in the D zone and found a way to get a win here.
That's Connor McDavid on TNT after the game, talking with their broadcast team about his efforts. And he's such a confident kid, but I think he keeps emphasizing work rather than skill and talent.
He does work. In game one, he got zero shots. That's the first time in his postseason NHL career he's never got a shot on net in a game. He wasn't very good in game one. He was very, very good in game two. But he does work, Danny. I mean, the big thing is that his work ethic drives his skill. And you know that's important. The Canucks, it was a bad break. It went off of Ian Cole. Ian Cole's had a tough two games. But now you go back to Edmonton, and the series tied at one. The Canucks are proving not to be a pushover like everybody thought here in Canada that they were going to be.
Well, I thought it was going to be a learning year for them, and it still might be. But boy, they've really stepped up, and I think that they've gotten a lot of people in the Pacific Northwest very excited about what that's all. I shouldn't say Pacific Northwest; that's more Seattle. Let's say the Lower Mainland. All right.
Yes.
That's really something that's great for that franchise because they've been building and getting to this point. They had a great year, but now they've got to show it in the postseason. And Edmonton, well, you could say that that the sticks are tightening on the gloves a little bit, but that loosened them up to get that victory. Very, very important for Edmonton. And now they go back home, and you know what it's like there.
Yeah, it gets crazy in the playoffs without a doubt. And they fill the across the street at the where we stay at the Marriott, they fill that square. It will be raucous. It'll be big time play. But I like the Canucks game. I like the Oilers game response in game two. And then, you know, like I do, it's all about game and then response and game and then response.
Final thought. In the coaching derby, Sheldon Keefe is out of work, and he posted a rather heartfelt message to Maple Leafs fans that showed a lot of class. I think it's been a tough time in Toronto, not unexpected, but the coaching carousel continues, Drew. It's just some quick thoughts on that before we turn the show off.
Well, I think there's really interesting about all the names we're hearing going to maybe going to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Craig Berube is one of them. Maybe Dean Evason, maybe Todd McLellan. Jay Woodcroft's name has been mentioned. So some ex-Sharks names in there. But Sheldon Keefe, will Mike Sullivan now be on the way out and Sheldon Keefe back with Kyle Dubas in Pittsburgh? And then where does that put Mike Sullivan? There's still some coaching jobs open. There's a lot of good coaching candidates out there. We're going to see the dominoes fall again, and they're going to come quickly.
Another great episode of the Sharks Stanley Cup Playoff Report has come to a close. For Drew Amenda, I'm Dan Rusinowski.
You've been listening to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. This has been a presentation of the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.